Bless thee, Mother's opening prayer. O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Beloved Jesus Christ.
Blessed Master.
Blessed Master.
Dearest Mother.
Dearest Mother.
Beloved David.
Beloved David.
Saints and sages of all religions.
Saints and sages of all religions.
I bow to all of you.
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only king.
Be thou the only king.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Oh.
And Merry Christmas to all. I'm supposed to say it at the beginning, and then we'll listen to a short meditation right now.
I just thought I would look, since Larry said he was going to talk about Mother's birthday, I would look in our OneNote data file to find out what Mother talked about in regards to her birthday. And it's interesting because on the word birthday or my birthday, there wasn't a lot that came up. And then it wasn't until after I kind of chose things that I remembered that there were a couple of quotes on, I was born, but I didn't look those up. I just remember Mother one time said, I was born on Christmas Day just in time to ruin my mother's Christmas dinner. So Although with all her other children dying, I'm sure it didn't ruin her mother's Christmas dinner. It was a great gift from God for all of us. So I did find Mother talking about her birthday one year when she was at the first time she went to Ananda Ashram. And it's interesting because when you do spend Christmas time at Ananda Ashram, which I have twice, I think, they don't celebrate Christmas usually. And so everybody comes up to you and says, Happy Christmas, and maybe gives you a little hard candy, but that's about it. One year I was there and Prem Father's grandson was there. And as you all know, he was a musician, and there were a number of foreigners there that year, and they all got together with Prem and we did a little choir and sang some Christmas carols for Swamiji in the Bhajan Hall. But Mother goes on in this piece to talk about being there at the ashram and not celebrating either Christmas or her birthday. So what happened? But before she gets on to that, she tells this lovely story about Papa, and I just couldn't resist not reading that too. So, and this is then she segues into her own little story. So you may have heard this before at some point, and I think David also talked about this little story, but it's quite delightful. Swami Ram Dass many times told a story when I was over there for a year and sat at his feet and partook of his wisdom about the fact that he was wandering, an almost naked sadhu, with one piece of cloth over his body, not a rupee in his pocket, nothing but his faith and love for God. So he went to a place called Kasaragod, and he was living in a cave there for a while. And so the people, knowing that when a saint comes, that they are tremendously privileged to be in the company of such a one, just showered gifts upon him, money, food, clothing. And they built shelves in this cave, and they put all sorts of bottles containing food. And he was very, very fond of, what do you call it, rock crystal candy. And so one night he was lying down, and he was on a blanket, and he had one over him. In the middle of the night, a thief came to his door, and he advised him that he wanted to take all of his possessions. And Ram Dass said, Of course, why not? You are he. You have but to come in and take what is your own. So the thief took everything, and he looked at Ram Dass's clothes that he had on, and he said, Give me those also. So Ram Dass just took off everything. He had nothing in the cave left. He was stark naked, and the thief repented at the last minute and gave him a cloth to cover his body. And there he was, totally bereft of every possession he had in the world. So he said, Ram Dass felt, he always referred to himself in the third person, Ram Dass felt very much at peace himself. It was only God who had visited him to take back what was his own. So he said he went to sleep. Well, the next morning when the mothers came to visit him, as they do the saints every day, they found that the cave was absolutely bereft of every possession they had provided for him, and they were horror-stricken. And as they do in India, they became very loud about it, and they talked, one voice topping over another, about this terrible thing that had happened. And Ram Dass said, But he does not mind, he said. It is only God who'd come to take his own. Well, the mothers were still so upset about it. They went about and they collected all sorts of things. They replaced everything that he had and even more. So he said, He sat there and he smiled to himself and he said, Oh, Ram, Ram, how wonderful you are. You take from yourself and you give for yourself. What did Ram Dass lose? You took everything he had only to give him more than he had in the first place. So then he told a story another night about this rock crystal candy. And he said he was sleeping on the floor, just going to sleep. And he says, All of a sudden, Ram came and shook him by the shoulder. And took him by the shoulder and he shook him. He said, Wake up. Do you realize that I am God, that I am the sole creator of this universe, and that you should worship only me? So he said, and that means Papa said, Ram Dass said to him, Of course he knows it. Why do you disturb him when he wants to go to sleep? And he turned over, he said, and he tried to go back to sleep again. And he no more started to go to sleep, and again Ram shook him on the shoulder. Do you know that I made everything? I made all of the universes and beyond, that you would not be here if it was not for me, that without me, life does not exist. Papa says, Ram Dass knows that. Why are you disturbing him? Why are you disturbing him? And he said this went on time after time. And he said, finally, Ram Dass quietly, when Ram was still quiet, put his arm from underneath the blanket, reached up to the shelf where the sugar candy was, and he took the cover off very quietly and set it down. And he took the biggest piece of raw candy he could feel, and he held it down under the blanket real fast. So he said, he pretended to be asleep again. And he said, pretty soon, Ram again shook his shoulder and waked him up. And he said, Ram Dass, do you know? And Papa said, just when he opened his mouth, he said, Ram Dass stuck in the piece of sugar candy, and it took him, meaning capital H, Ram, all night to eat it. And so Ram had a good night's sleep. He used to tell stories like this, and then everyone so loved to have him tell these stories, especially the people at the ashram, because then he always had this big bottle of rock candy and he would distribute it, and they would just flock around. I think they could really smell when food was around these poor, hungry people, because they would come in droves. I remember that when I was there for Christmas, which was my birthday, and it was my first time away from home and my family, and I was feeling very, very lonely indeed. I was feeling very, very put upon that I wasn't going to have a birthday party. It was my first time without a Christmas tree, no presents, no nothing. So he sent all the way from where we were in the ashram and in Anandashram, 2 hours away by train, to Mangalore, she must be meaning Papa, to order a big birthday cake for me. And there it came. It was about so big. She must have measured it for the audience with her hands. And Father and I had been going to take the train to Mangalore to attend the Catholic church there, but Ram Dass decided we shouldn't do that. So then instead he ordered the cake. Well, finally it came to serve the cake. And they don't have plates like we do, or paper cups or things like that. They had a lot of newspapers cut in little squares. So that's what they had all stacked up, and each one was given a piece of cake on the newspaper. Well, the cake pieces were only about that big, and I guess Genji must show us. And when we started out, there were only a few people around. Nobody had known it was going to happen. And I swear that it went out. The signal went out, and that cake was gone before you could say Jack Robinson, as the saying goes. And I got a piece about that big of my own birthday cake. But at least I had a birthday cake. It was a tremendous experience all the way through. Fascinating. But you see, this is what it means to truly love God, to give yourself and everything you possess to Him. Because without Him, we could not live, nor breathe, nor move, nor have our being. He is our all in all. And when you come to the realization of that oneness with that tremendous presence that is within you, which is your true self, your very self, God in human form, then truly you have realized the purpose for which you were born. All the rest of the things that happen in your life are but experiences necessary to take you to that moment. Everybody looks for perfect happiness, happiness in the human state. You look for love from your sweetheart, from your wife, from your husband, from your children, and somehow or other it never turns out perfectly. Always there's something missing. But in God, He is the bridegroom, and each and every one of us, men and women alike, every soul, is the bride of Christ eventually. Then I found another little reference to Mother's birthday, and she was given a card for Christmas Day and one for her birthday. So this is Mother reading her own card. A loving birthday greeting for the dearest of all mothers, to wish you all the happiness you're always giving others, to thank you for all the things you've done in such a thoughtful way, and then remind you once more again how much you're loved each day. Have a wonderful birthday. There are many, many names and all this money that I can use for God's work. Let me say that I appreciate very much your thanks, but I give it all to God, because without Him I am nothing. He makes me live and breathe, walk, sleep, eat, everything. I could not do one thing if it were not for Him. And I serve Him in each one of you with all my heart, my mind, and my soul. And any credit for anything that I do goes to Him alone, because without Him I am nothing. He makes all things possible for each and every single one of us, as I have said. I am the littlest one on the Christmas tree of life, I feel. That I can serve God in each of you is my greatest pleasure. and my greatest privilege because I too am serving Christ in you each moment. I'm fortunate to have my birthday on Christ's birthday. And then I guess I'll read this that was at the end of the first talk that I read in 1978. So she has a number of things she says between what I had read and this. But this is interesting because of it being Christ's birthday. The Christ is really born anew at the time of the resurrection. Jesus, the Son of Man, is born, and that's when we celebrate his birth. But there is no known record on earth, and I've searched and searched and I've read and read and read. No known record on earth as to the exact birth of Christ. None whatsoever. So the day which has been chosen for his birth has to do with the seasons, and they were pagan ceremonies at the time. And if you do not believe me, do your research work yourself. Look in the encyclopedias, look in all the scriptural histories, and find out for yourself what I tell you is the truth. There's no definite date when he passed on, none. And people who have gone to Jerusalem have been told that he was buried in this place, and then he was buried in that place. And finally, it is said that the Muslims took over the first place where he was actually buried. It is all symbolic, all symbolic. But man has made it a reality, and he follows a legend, a fairy tale, instead of knowing the truth. Just thinking also, though, when we think about that, that sometimes it's hard to think about the fact that it may not be historically true, and a lot of people were upset when Mother might say this. But then she would also talk about the mystic feeling of the birth of the Christ and how that moves inside each of us, because that symbolic message, not really a message, that symbolic experience is what we experience when we come to having that Christ birth in ourselves. Okay, I'll let Larry take the seat.
Thank you. Very nice. Good choice. It comes alive sometimes when you hear her read by someone instead of just reading it yourself, which is also nice. But if anyone wants to talk about Mother or to suggest a topic, by all means. The symbolism is the covering or the story. But it reflects something real. That's what we have to remember, and that's what Mother focused on, that which is real. And the stories can, once you know that the stories are clothing for the story, for the reality, you can then get insights from the mythology, the symbolism. There's many, many insights from great writings.
I was going to say, Larry, within the last week, I think it was, Swami Muktananda gave a little talk about the guru-disciple relationship. Do you remember that? Somebody asked him about, the lady asked the question regarding the relationship. And after listening to Swamiji, which I don't find too easy to understand his accent, but it took me just a little step closer to I guess you could say missing the physical form of Mother and missing the physical form of David.
Mm-hmm.
Because he said, you know, it's the ideal that you worship. And how it can be a real detriment to attachment to the form.
But it caused you to be even more attached or to remember your attachment? Is that what you're saying, Judy?
No, to remember God rather than remember the form that he took in Mother and David, which I always had trouble with because I felt Mother to be my mother in the most divine way, but still the form is there for me, and I try so hard to see, to go beyond the form, and then David, to spend so much time with David. Oh my goodness, I got so attached to the form. And so just little things that Swamiji said, I wish I could tell you more. I tried to look it up. I didn't know you were going to speak tonight. I tried to look it up and I didn't have time to, but yeah, maybe you could talk about that a little bit, Larry. Going beyond the form.
Yeah. Well, as I think about it, the form, when you think of as being false, perhaps, or mythological, or not being the real form, and it's really an exercise in the higher planes, in the causal plane, that we have access to. And in a way, we can inwardly come higher, closer to the truth than the story can tell. The thing about history is, it really isn't. It really isn't what is important. Exactly where he was, what he was doing, who were his apostles. This is true for all of these teachings of great mythological stories around them. The truth is the most important thing. And the thing is, we shouldn't divorce that from the person's identity or the real person. Mother said there must have been a great, great master who lived at that time, who could write these stories and who could inspire these stories. Many people got connected to God through these stories and gained access to God themselves. So if the history was wrong, if that's what is, and the truth becomes more, and what actually happened historically is more important, then that's really a form of materialism. And so we really need to revere the things that happened historically and to get them right, because the story can be more accurate then. But the story is pointing to something much greater. I love that term incarnation, because, you know, we in the Christian world talk about Jesus as the incarnation, it's surprising perhaps to Christians to realize that when the Hindus say avatar, that just means descent from spirit into flesh. Incarnation means incarnate, dwelt among us, born in the flesh. So there is some great person. And many of these great saints do go through a crucifixion-like experience. In other words, something that destroys the ego, destroys the body many times too, of course. The mother often tells the story that it's like going into this yourself, that, you know, we are to learn from her teachings and from the mythological stories of Jesus, but she still is pointing out to us, because, you know, this is what happens inside. Really, we take this personally. And the identity as to who the person is where the problems come. We find ourselves, you know, a little bit sad and weepy sometimes, thinking of the things, the plight that we have been through. And it is difficult, so it's nothing wrong with some of these feelings, but we need to stand up and to push through. We need to not let that human take over us, not to deny it and not to say it isn't real, but that it cannot be used to stop us. I think many people go very high and they find themselves without the inner resources to go all the way and to stand up on your own feet and to say, I will get through this.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not let any of the external. Do you think the story of the Christ is really demeaning for a person who was innocent, because it's only crucifixion was reserved for the criminals and people of very, not just ill repute, but really, really bad people. And, you know, they had to have started a fight or a battle or a revolution, even a revolt, a small revolt. All of those things happened in Israel. But to then, having gone through those things, see that we can push through this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're left at the end of the death of the ego in the state that Jesus was and dying on the cross and buried. Now the resurrection is symbolic of the inner story. And that is that once the death of the ego happens, the body might still be living, depending on how God arranges things. And so I think the resurrection is the true self, as Mother says on the cross that Jesus gave up the ghost, but he returned with the power of the Holy Ghost. And that this is the divine ego. So in her case, she actually, her body was very damaged and she had paralysis. She said rigor mortis. So the body had really gone through it. And so the fact that the body was recoverable wasn't necessarily due to great powers of the body and miraculous things of that sort. But the body was left alive by God long enough so that it could sustain what it had gone through and then could recover, because the divine ego still had a role to play.
For all of us.
Definitely for all of us.
Larry, I think that Judy was asking about the attachment to the form. Mm-hmm. Swami Muktananda often says that what should attract us is that ideal, that is the guru, and that we get attached to the form. And I know when I first heard him say that, I was, well, I love that form too. And speak to that a little bit if you feel like it. There seems to be a necessity to have some attachment to that form to begin with, at least.
That's my first thought, too. We have to give up the attachment, but we first have to get attached. And people often think, well, I don't want to get attached, and so I won't get close. And then I won't learn the lessons that the guru is able to teach me. The attachment is the means by which we get close enough to the guru to hear the whispers of the inner guru.
Mm-hmm.
So we need the attachment, and then we have to give it up, because we are shown, as the guru is the way shower, we are shown the way to get to God. And so we release the form and embrace the God that is in the guru. We don't leave the guru behind. The true guru is not the form. The form is very, very necessary at different times.
Yeah, I think with me, you know, you would think I'd get over Mother and David leaving their bodies by now. but I'm not fully over it yet, you know. So Swami Muktananda's words helped me a little bit to, you know, to just see a little more of the essence. But you're right. I'm glad that you said everything you did say, and just a little phrase like you got to keep pushing forward, right? That's so important to hear. It's really important to hear, because we're given exactly what we need to accomplish, each one of us individually. And it's not easy, but we see clearly that we have a mission, and this is our mission. We're showing our mission, you know.
Yeah, Mother always says that, you know, you seek first the kingdom of God, God and his kingdom. And that's because that's the most important thing to do. And if there is work to do here, God will let us know. But most people attain realization if they come to the, if that occurs in the physical world, from what Mother's taught us. They leave the body. They don't have any more karma here. And they, this is what the Hindus focus on. Oh, I don't want to come back down here again. And so, and that's understandable. I'm not complaining about that, but the idea of the bodhisattva vow, the compassionate return, so is something we have to admire too. These are real, these are God's great heroes that come back in the form, in the way that they do. And everything happens in this realm because of the, these great masters who come back. Come to us and stay with us and teach from a realized state.
And then, you know, for some of us to be blessed with, I'll say recognition, but it's so beyond just recognition, but just to know the divinity in a soul. That is such a blessing, you know. Because it doesn't happen automatically. It's a gift. Absolute. Swami Muktananda talked about that too. You know, he tried to explain that when we come upon someone, it's not the it doesn't have anything to do with the physical form. It has to do with us for some reason. You know, there's, I don't know.
Which day was that satsang, Judy?
It wasn't very long ago. It wasn't very long ago. He gave a little talk, and it, you know how every day we have the little message from Papa. Mm-hmm. Well, this was within, it seems like it was only within the last week. And it was a little, a very small talk, but he, yeah, it was very good. Very, very good. Yeah.
Good. I'll look it up. That's good to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
He's a great teacher, you know. He really is. He's steeped in these teachings and knows them really, really well. He's a great, good teacher. He really explains things well. Yeah, you know, we've done some videos of him, and we put subtitles on most of his stuff. We still have one more to do, by the way, so we need to get that out. And that's the talk that he gave here at the Ananda, the Bothell Temple of Ananda. Remember what that was called, Kate? Anyway, it was a he. Some of the people from the ashram from the farm were there too, and they asked some really good questions. It was a really, really, really very interesting exchange. But also, the talk itself was very good.
I pulled it up, the text of it.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks. I usually look at them, but I didn't.
Yeah.
I did it this
morning. Okay. Well, this is like you say, Judy. It's pretty short. Let's do this. So there's a question from someone to Swami Muktananda. Tell us about Guru Shishya relationship. Does that sound right, Judy?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. And then Swamiji says, a Shishya, a disciple, feels total gratitude towards his guru, and he expresses his gratitude in the form of service. But in the process, he has to ensure that he does not get attached to the form. He is inspired by his master, not because of his physical form, but for something that stands out from the rest of the people, values which are impersonal. So while serving the master, he should always ensure that he adores the values, and he adores the form, because the values are there in a personified form. Always, he should be very clear about that. Otherwise, there is a risk of getting attached to the form. The Shishya should always, also always ensure that my guru, in quotes, my guru should also be proud of me. How will he become proud of me? When I follow his teachings, when I bring out what is expected of me. The other day, somebody pointed out that the guru would like his Shishya to excel him. I think he means exceed his what he's attained. Then the guru will be very, very happy. So the guru-shishya relationship should definitely be based on the impersonal aspect and not on the personal aspect. We are proud of our guru. The guru also should be proud of us. This should always come to our mind, always. I am revering the guru because of the values he personifies. Otherwise, he is also an individual like anybody else. Initially, I may be attached to his form, but I should transcend. I should graduate myself from the personal to the impersonal, from the person to the ideal. One saint has put it beautifully. Looking at the disciple, the world should know who the guru is. That means the guru's ideal should be living through me. Whenever I am reacting towards events and individuals, this should be writ large in my mind. Will the guru approve the way in which I have dealt with the situation? That means every time the ideal keeps on reminding you, and you will be on your toes. This can be termed as the right kind of guru-shishya relationship. Are you?
Thank you. I really appreciate you reading it, because I missed a lot of it when Swamiji was talking.
Touches on a lot of the good things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But you see, my point, though, that I'm making is that people read such things, and we're told, and Swamiji is clear on it. He says the attachment to the form is natural. But the the modern Western intellectual especially thinks, well, I can just jump over that. I don't need to get attached to the form. Now, of course, we don't want to be attached to the form in that sense, in that you have a very difficult time giving it up. And it becomes a stumbling block. That's what they're really teaching. But to be attached to the guru, to a great saint, still is a very high state. It should be seen that way. That when a guru takes you in and brings you in close, this is a great test for you, for certain. That's what's being discussed here. But please understand that the mind can't get a hold of these ideas and think, I can just jump over that. I don't need a guru because I don't want to become attached. These are the lessons that people sometimes take from this kind of talk. And I don't mean Swamiji here, but rather the general idea that you have to give up the form.
Thank you, because the mind can't comprehend spirit.
Yeah.
He
can slowly understand the benefit of the spirit, for sure, but you're right, there's no way that it can.
Thank you, that's great.
It's about, like everything that Mother talked about, there's a balance in all these things that we have to be able to not be pushed off the path, or let ourselves be drawn off the path. We all go through this process. We come down to this earth and we nestle into it. And we hope we have good parents and a good era to live in. But if we're not tested, if we don't go through difficulties and trials, we'll never really know ourselves. And know what? Know the lower self. But it is to then give, when one gives up that self, it's from a position of strength, knowing all that you can attain in this personal sense is still worth nothing in relationship to God. So if we have a twin relationship, Mother liked strong personalities. So if we have this development of the ego in a positive way and the development of the spiritual understanding. The spiritual understanding will trump the personal understanding.
Thank you. I personally really needed to hear what you said. That's wonderful.
I like what you said, Larry, about the need for balance. And just speaking for myself, I think I would be bereft not having had Mother's presence in my life, like her physical presence, to be in contact with her. And even to the extent that I think it is, or I suspect it is necessary to have a guru's actual touch to be able to move forward.
We got more than that, didn't we? We got a hug, mini hug.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that I don't understand the exchange that takes place there, but I think it is a necessary one. For my own experience, I would be bereft without that, I think.
It's life-changing.
So I like your idea of balance in this. It's not to put it away,
right,
or, you know, to dismiss it. I think embrace it on all levels. Mother was a force. I wouldn't want to give up any part of that experience with her.
To see Mother at her height, and we really are very lucky, all of us who did, to see what it was like. You know, to see her smile at you when you came up to hug her too, you could see that you were included. You know, we heard, maybe some of you remember, but Mother, in a talk we've heard recently, Mother was talking about the fact that she was talking to an astrologer. And Mother says, and she told me, I think it was a woman, or he told me, that it was that I would, I forget, live for 86 more years, or no, 1986, or I would be 86 when I left this body. I can't remember, she said. So interesting that she was 86 when she passed away in 1991. So the year. It wasn't the year, it was. It just kind of ring a bell, too. We kind of wondered if she wouldn't live. She passed in the late 80s, but she kept going and becoming stronger and giving talks. 1983, I think she gave, I don't know, 3 or 4, maybe 5 or 6 talks. In 84, not very many also, but many, but more. In 85, she was writing poems and quite active.
It's interesting, you know, because basically I think a lot of people, to describe Mother, their first word would be powerful, the power of God there.
Yeah.
Yet there was such tenderness, you know.
It's funny as you say that, you're right. In front of a group of people, the power was undeniable. But on the individual level, it was like you were just so warmly treated. Yeah. It's personal. Yeah.
Oh, I was just going back to that astrologer. Was that the one that told her you have a very big family indeed?
No, I don't think it was.
Different.
I think it was different. I guess she had. We have now tapes of Mother's, at least three, I think, three tapes of her being given a reading. And Jerry Makis was the one that she always talked about, but I don't remember that. I think it was later after that, but I'm guessing.
It was that shot of the really big group.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. show you a gift that I got from Kate for Christmas. Beautiful rendition of Lahir Mahasya. And it's a crystal clarity that Kate ordered on the morning. I guess it
not coming up very well.
Yeah, the focus isn't all that good, but it's quite beautiful. And it's a nice size. It's not gigantic, but it's one we can have here in the living room.
The interesting thing is that I intended to buy Sri Yukteswar for Larry because of him having just worked on the Holy Science so much. And I was sure that was what I had ordered. And I must have just clicked one over. Larry said, Larry Mahasya had decided he wanted to come to the house instead. So,
good job.
Oh, sorry, Michelle.
Sorry. Did Chad get a bigger version of that
for David? Yeah.
1 year.
Yeah. That was always Larry Mahasya was always the one David felt closest to, and Larry's always felt closest to Sri Yukteswar. So it's interesting. The David must have been clicking the thing for me. So we'll have to get him another one now.
It's 120 years ago, wasn't it, that Mother was born?
Mm-hmm.
And next year will be Mother's, the 100th anniversary for Mother meeting Master in September of 2025. And the year of the Inquest of God being printed. So I'm not sure what the ashram is going to do, but it might do some mention of that. Lots going on. Right about the same time, or clear near to when Mother Master Meher Baba took his vow of silence that he never broke. He said that when he breaks his, he's an interesting character, and Mother really loved him and thought very highly of him. But he was an enigma for sure. Because he said, when I speak, then the whole world will know it, or the whole world will come to an end, something of that sort. And then there's people who claim that he did speak to them. When they met with him privately, he would speak to them. And one of the devotees of his said that he could speak inwardly so strongly that you could hear his voice in your head. And so the idea that, so a disciple will sometimes be dogmatic about it and say that, you know what, I know what, you know, when you give up speech, I know what that is. That means he doesn't talk. You know, Meher Baba and the masters always, we don't know what they mean when they say it. And so they can break all the rules, or they can follow the rule that they were really talking about. So Mother passed away on the same day, January 31st, as Meher Baba. She read from the 50s and the 60s, she read from him quite a bit, and he seemed to influence her. That's why I bring him up every now and then. And she used to recommend his books. Not sure which ones, because there were some that were, like God Speaks is very difficult. It's, God Speaks is for his disciples. But it's worth reading. It's kind of like the Holy Science, but the Holy Science is short. And God Speaks is huge. And he goes into all the different worlds, all the different aspects of the universe, how it's created, how things really work. Shocking. I'm thinking of him right now.
For some reason, I have it in my head that when Papa, after Mother said that the Bible is the story of the evolution of every man from the human to the divine, and then Papa said, you have made him say it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I wondered if that, I don't know why, but someone must have said something somewhere that was Meher Baba. breaking his silence, that was the earth, shaking, relation sort of thing, you know? I don't know. I don't know why I have those two.
So explain that. Say that again.
Yeah, that Meher Baba said that he would break his silence, but he never did that we know of.
That's right.
But when Mother made that statement, for some reason, I think that was Meher Baba breaking his silence. I don't know why.
I thought they were connected too.
And Ricky says he thought they were connected too, those. I don't know why.
You mean when Mother talked about him?
No. When she was with Papa.
Oh, I see. Oh, very good. I'm sorry. Yes. That's beautiful. That's really amazing. Yeah.
It's interesting, eh?
Yeah, Meher Baba never spoke about himself as the person who looks like Meher Baba in the pictures. He's talking about the God, so that you're so right. That's a beautiful insight. Yes.
It's not mine. We heard it somewhere along our journey. I don't know why, but I believe it, you know, because it's what we needed on this earth.
Yeah. You have made him say it.
Yeah, we have a very unusual path, Reverend Larry, because we totally accept Meher Baba saying that he is God and loving it.
Yeah. And knowing it's true.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
With Papa and Master, we know both of them.
Without a doubt. Yeah. All the different flavors of God. So many different flavors.
You know, one thing we learned with this holy science is that I'll repeat what we talked about in the class, that so fascinates me that I think about it a lot, is this idea of the koshas, the sheaths around the atom. So best I understand it, the individual spark, the individual person, is a single atom. Now, our body is it trillions, but certainly billions of atoms. And but the one, now Mother said that she believed that the genesis of the body is from the third eye point, and that that's the first cells that are, that when the first splitting occurs, that occurs at the that later becomes the third eye point, at the location that later becomes the third eye point. But that cell, that individual, not cell, excuse me, that atom, has sheaths around it that when removed, we can graduate from base matter to plants to mobile animals. And then when that third sheath is taken away, we have a person who is ready for a human body. And so the latter two sheaths, when they're removed, you gain not a new style of being that's visible in this earth, like we do with plants, material plants, animals, humans, but instead we have a state of consciousness that's much greater, and this is why we can't always tell when a saint enters the room. If they're not projecting, if they don't have a function or something to do, and the Shakti is not pouring from them. And then when the fifth sheath is pulled, then you have a being, human being. That part stays the same, the form stays the same, but the sheath, that the person is fully realized. It's light that we feel with the Shakti when we are around the great master and they reveal some aspect of themselves. It's because they have no sheaths around them. Their light can be seen by all. And we get glimpses of it, and these are great experiences to have this glimpse of the light of God. So many people talk about a master, you know, exuding or radiating this light from their body. It's a great gift when you're not fully realized yourself to see it. God gives us hints all the time. You know, I've been reading a lot and in watching some courses on just recently on Gnosticism. And, you know, the early Christian era, we really must realize how this time, if for some reason, has become so iconic in our minds. We all relate, so many of us Westerners who are raised in Christian, even Jewish and Muslim somewhat, that this great Christ came. This great movement of consciousness happened at that time. And this Christmas time evokes that in us, evokes our respect for whatever it was that happened. The power of God is known, no doubt, great with all of the different sects of the religion. These people they do have access to the spiritual realm because of their studies. Now we can always worry about the ones who misunderstand and turn into even negative or opposing force strongly. It all is necessary. It's all part of this. Thank you, Noel, for coming tonight.
Thank you for giving us meaning. I needed this tonight. It's so wonderful to be
with our family. Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Very welcome. Thank you.
Hari Om, Larry.
Hari Om. I'll say the closing prayer. Please pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father.
My Holy Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with my healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am here.
Blessed Spirit, I am here.
Happy New Year.